I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 28th of September, and it's all things political. Our guest this hour is Matt Visor. He covers the White House and national politics for the Boston Globe. Oh, we have so much to talk about this hour. We'll get to this during the hour because he wrote a very interesting piece on Donald Trump's years in Atlantic City, where he went, he says, from a glitzy start to bankruptcy. So we will talk with him about that. And we've had the Pope here for a 6-day, 3-city tour. He met with 5 victims of sexual abuse yesterday. He went to a prison. We'll look at a new poll, a tightening race between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton's email issue just isn't going away. She's losing ground in the polls. She's at 41, Bernie Sanders at 35, and Joe Biden is at 17%. Carly Fiorina is on the rise. We'll ask how she performed as CEO of Hewlett-Packard. President Obama is at the UN for 3 days of meeting, including a large one this afternoon with Putin from Russia. So that's interesting. And whatever else you want to talk about. Here's how you reach our conversation. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Matt, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. What a week it was, wasn't it? I mean, it was just incredible. There was so much happening.
Very. Yeah, news every couple minutes, it seemed.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the Pope for just a moment, because he did draw very large crowds. He had some poignant meetings with people who are suffering on this planet. What was the impact of the visit? What difference does it make for him to have been in America?
I mean, I think one thing is just, you know, particularly for Catholics, I mean, seeing the Pope. I mean, it's huge crowds just to look at the guy, you know? I mean, he was, you know, in 3 major cities and sort of driving around. I mean, in Washington, where I'm based, you know, the roads were shut down and, you know, people were sort of standing out and just, you know, looking at his Fiat, you know, to sort of drive by. But I think the overarching message, I think, you know, there were a lot of things that he touched on, but like in Washington, he went to a homeless shelter and, you know, did things like that. His message to Congress was a lot about climate change, you know. So I think it's a message that that Democrats want to push, but that the Republicans don't so much, you know. And he had some poignant moments with John Boehner, you know, the day before John Boehner resigned, you know, announced that he was going to leave. So, you know, I mean, I think overall it was, you know, there was a lot of things that he packed into to the week that he was here.
Mm-hmm. And then he left with the moon last night. Oh, the moon was something, too, wasn't it?
Yeah. I didn't see it, but I saw the pictures of it.
I watched the whole darn thing. I was just staring at it and staring at it, and I thought, well, I guess there are a lot of people all over the world doing the same thing right now. It was good.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Boehner for a moment, announcing his resignation on Friday. A very, very surprising, perhaps, to some. Cheers from members of the Tea Party in the Republican wing of Congress. They were happy to see him go. What's going to happen? Why did he resign, and what will happen now?
I think, you know, it was surprising. It caught a lot of people off guard, partly because of the timing. I mean, there's been, you know, rumors of Boehner, you know, kind of, I mean, it's been a very trying speakership for him. You know, he's had a lot of issues with his caucus, with the Republican caucus right now. Is tough to, you know, coalesce. And so there'd been this notion of him leaving for a while, but the timing, you know, and nobody expected it, you know, Friday for sure, you know. So I think the timing of it threw a lot of people off guard. I think there's a lot of reasons for it. I mean, part of it is, you know, Boehner is sort of, he's got a very conservative record, but he's also kind of pragmatic in a way. He likes to cut deals. He likes to be the deal maker, and he's not been able to do that. His speakership has not been marked at all by sort of cutting deals. It's more a speakership by triage. You know, he's just trying to get to the next thing. And, you know, every sort of what in the past had been inconsequential votes suddenly take on new meaning, you know, lately, like, just continuing resolutions to keep the budget funded have been big battles within the Republican caucus because they want to extract things from Democrats as part of that. So, you know, it's been a tough speakership for him. And what's next is hard to tell. It looks like Kevin McCarthy, who's been the majority leader under John Boehner, was the most likely person to be the next speaker. And McCarthy is similar in a lot of ways to Boehner, so I don't know that it's going to get a lot easier in inside those closed door meetings with the Republican caucus, you know, as they try and figure out how to grapple with the votes and things that will be coming up, like the debt ceiling.
So when conservative lawmakers cheered the news, many of them applauded. Why were they applauding?
I think some of it is illustrated right now in the Republican presidential race, where the front runners, the people leading the polls at least, have been Donald Trump and Carly Fiorina and Ben Carson. None of them ever in their lives have held elected office. And I think there's an appetite, there's a real anti-Washington atmosphere right now in the electorate, probably one that a lot of people have underestimated. And so Boehner has become emblematic of that. And, you know, he's been in Washington for a long time, and he likes to cut deals in Washington, you know. And so I think particularly for grassroots conservatives, for the Tea Party movement, Boehner has been, you know, somebody that they want to get out of there. You know, he's the object of their scorn. So I think for that reason, there were cheers. I mean, there were cheers at the Value Voters Summit in Washington. I think it was Marco Rubio who first made the announcement that Boehner had resigned, and cheers went up in the hall. You know, so I mean, I think Boehner emblifies the Washington culture to a lot of conservative Republicans who think that Boehner hasn't been tough enough. You know, he hasn't shown enough of a backbone in going up against Democrats to win concessions that they think that Republicans should get.
So you imagine the next speaker will not be as pragmatic?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's because there is a wing of the party, and Kevin McCarthy in some ways is part of that wing that thinks that, you know, the demands from the hard right are unrealistic demands. You know, to continue to pass defunding Obamacare is, you know, it's fine to do and take time on the House floor to do, but it's unrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
Obama's in office, and you know, we're not going to be able to do that. That, you know, it's not a realistic goal for us to set. The latest iteration of that is Planned Parenthood. And do we want to defund Planned Parenthood so badly that we'll allow the government to shut down in order to do it? And Boehner and, you know, McCarthy's kind of in that camp too, of sort of saying, you know, this isn't the right battle for us to pick right now, you know, and let's fight another day on another topic when we have a better hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it just makes it it's not like Boehner leaving sort of will clear the air and now the Republicans will be unified. You know, it's Boehner's exit, I don't think, does that so much. So I think we're still sort of going to have a lot of discord, not only in Washington, but just among Republicans in Washington.
Why has Planned Parenthood become such a big issue? And certainly Carly Fiorina is being quite graphic about a film that was made. My understanding is that film was doctored.
That's right. I mean, I think that's part of the issue, and part of the issue is that the film does not, that we've seen at least, does not show the images that she says that the film shows.
Mm-hmm.
So she's kind of taking some things, you know, not only out of context, but that just don't stand up to the facts. It doesn't appear. And I mean, I think that Planned Parenthood has been an object of scorn for Republicans for a while, but not one to the degree that it is now. And I think the video coming out, the empowerment of some of the more conservative elements in the party, you know, kind of gives them a louder voice within party discussions over how to handle things. But as a result, yeah, I mean, Planned Parenthood is become a sort of a huge issue, and to the degree that it's questioned on presidential debate stages at this point.
Right. I understand that Bobby Jindal, governor of Louisiana, called on Mitch McConnell to resign.
Yeah, I mean, and I think for similar reasons as as Boehner. You know what I mean? Like Boehner, and I think this was Bobby Jindal, I think at the last debate, actually was saying this. And so, I mean, I think that McConnell and Boehner both have become, you know, boogeymen, you know, for a lot of Republicans, and emblematic of all that's wrong with Washington and wrong with Republicans in Washington. You know, for a while it was just criticize Washington, but now, you know, it's the leaders of Washington specifically, and Republicans criticizing Republican leaders. So I think they feel like they're not standing up for the core beliefs that they have. So you're getting a sitting governor of Louisiana calling on the resignation of a sitting Senate Majority Leader from Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. But tell me what you think about the funding of the government with Planned Parenthood intact. That vote will happen this week?
It does seem like that, and it seems like a lot of the, you know, the battles that had been set up previous to Boehner's announcement, it may not turn out to be, you know, as vitriolic, you know, perhaps. I mean, I think Boehner's resignation gives him a little bit of space and will allow him, at least on the House side, to work with Democrats, you know, which is virtually unheard of these days. But, you know, with Boehner leaving, you know, I think there's less political risk in working with Democrats to pass some of the things that they need to pass. The Senate, you could see a bigger battle over some of those things, especially with senators like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, people who are running for president and have very high profiles and will, you know, no doubt go to the Senate floor and make a big to-do if they're not satisfied with what's being done.
Let's move to the presidential race. You wrote a really interesting piece about Donald Trump recently in the Boston Globe, his years in Atlantic City, his boom, and then his bust years. The Taj Mahal Casino in 1990. Tell us that story, please, Matt.
So, yeah, this is, you know, Donald Trump has talked, Atlantic City has been sort of a topic in the presidential campaign, and Trump certainly was a significant player in Atlantic City for you know, almost a quarter century. So I went to Atlantic City and wanted to explore Trump's years there. So the story starts out in 1990 when Trump was opening the Trump Taj Mahal right on the boardwalk in Atlantic City. At the time, it was the biggest casino and the most expensive casino in the world. And, you know, there was a lot of activity when it opened. You know, a 6-minute firework display. Michael Jackson came, and they sort of had huge crowds, you know, tens of thousands of people there to witness the opening of this grand casino. And for a while, it was grand. It made a lot of money, and Trump did very well. But within a year, actually, of that opening of the Taj, Trump filed for bankruptcy on the hotel and the casino, which was the first of four bankruptcies that he would go on to file, you know, over the next decade or so. And you know, brought a lot of the troubles, you know, that Trump had in Atlantic City and with casinos. Some of it probably his fault, some of it the circumstances of the gambling industry as it expanded throughout the East Coast. But you get a sense, I think, through looking at Trump's years there of the, you know, the flamboyance of Trump that we see today, as well as, you know, some of the boastfulness that he has, along with a very, you know, trying period for his business career with dealing with bankruptcies four times.
Philip Steinberg, I think, is his name, a former Trump investor. You quote him in your piece. He's the biggest jerk I've ever known. He hurt so many people. He bankrupted second and third generation electricians and plumbers.
Yeah, there's an interesting reaction sort of among people in Atlantic City, particularly among those who are close to Trump. Trump investors lost a lot of money on Trump. You know, they invested in these casinos, and at one time it seemed like a sure bet. You know, I mean, they were making tons of money, and Trump did very well, and he sort of still brags about how much money he made at that period, but he made money as investors were losing a lot of money. They got pennies on the dollar for some of the shares that they had in his company. So people like Philip Steinberg are very upset at Trump. And they saw a little bit about what Trump did to contractors or to sort of mom and pop stores and places that kind of bought into the Trump mystique and the Trump name as it was building, and the city was revitalized again, and Atlantic City was a destination around the world. I mean, people go to Atlantic City as a resort and go to the casinos or go to the boardwalk and go to shows and boxing fights and wrestling matches and things. And it was sort of an exciting time. And I think Trump brought the city along with him. So a lot of those dreams, you know, died when Trump left and with Trump's bankruptcies. And so there's still a good amount of bitterness toward Trump, not only for leaving, but sort of the way that he talks about it now, you know, mm-hmm. about how he made a good decision to leave, you know, Atlantic City. You know, it was a smart move to get out of there. You know, I've got very rich by it, you know, so
right.
people who did not get very rich by right. it are not pleased with some of those.
Understandably.
Comments.
But yeah. getting to what's truly important, you did visit a psychic and you asked her if Trump would be president, and she said...
She said 100% yes, you know, he's meant to be president. So, you know, yeah, this was, I was walking along the boardwalk at, you know, about 8 o'clock at night. You know, it was pretty desolate, actually. I mean, it was a weeknight, but weeknights in Las Vegas are very lively, and this was not lively. So I went and visited a psychic to sort of see what, if she could look into her tarot cards and figure out what Donald Trump's future held. So she determined that he would be president. But she also said he's very greedy, and so he probably won't only have one term.
Matt Visor is our guest this hour. It's All Things Political. He's the White House and National Politics Reporter for the Boston Globe. There's so much going on. The Pope's visit, big times at the UN. We're going to be having a meeting between President Obama and Vladimir Putin sometime this afternoon. 3 days the president is spending with the UN. We've got new numbers, and it looks like a tightening race on the Republican side. And we have yet to talk about Hillary Clinton, who can't get rid of these emails. They're just, that story has been there, and it's been there, and it's been there. And she's losing some ground on the Democratic side. We will talk about what needs to take place for those emails to go away, if anything, or if that's going to plague her for the whole run of the campaign. Here's our phone number. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, where we'd love to get your messages, is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. So we'll be with you in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you want to join us, our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. What do you make of John Boehner deciding that he's had it? He's leaving his position and he's leaving the House at the end of October. What do you imagine will be the ramifications of that decision? We are talking about Donald Trump. I hope you have had a chance to read Matt's piece on his years in Atlantic City. We are talking about Planned Parenthood. We're talking about funding the government. Carly Fiorina will talk more about her and her performance as CEO of Hewlett-Packard as we continue. And the president of the UN for 3 days of meetings, including one this afternoon with Vladimir Putin, which should be darned interesting. And the Pope's 6-day three-city tour. So we want to know what you think about all of that. Let's talk, though, before we go to phones, Matt, about Hillary Clinton. She just can't get away from this email issue. It's just there. It's there. It seems as though whatever she says just isn't enough because something new surfaces.
Yeah, and the latest of that is, you know, she said that she started using her this private email account in March of 2009 and turned over those emails to the State Department. But new emails have surfaced with her exchanging emails with David Petraeus much earlier, a couple months earlier than that. So, you know, it is this sort of drip, 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 mm-hmm. you know, and, which is the term that Hillary Clinton herself used yesterday on Meet the Press, and of new information that, you know, at times contradicts what the Clinton campaign and Hillary Clinton herself have said previously. So it does not seem to go away, and part of that is the current environment, the media environment, the narrative around her. But part of that, too, is the Clinton campaign. You know, public relations 101 is sort of get all the facts and put them all out, you know, as soon as possible to sort of clear the air. You may have a bad couple days or a bad couple weeks, but then you can move on. In this case, that's not happened, you know, so it does create this kind of avalanche of information, you know, over time, and it's kind of created issues for her campaign.
Can you imagine something she could do or needs to do in order to clear herself of this nagging issue?
It does seem like, you know, get all of the information out there, and part of that is difficult because the State Department is still reviewing the emails that she turned over, and they're releasing those kind of one batch a month, you know, so that creates a little bit of an issue for her.
But right.
I do think if they could, you know, she had an initial press conference in at the UN, you know, actually a couple months ago when all of this sort of was first starting, and you had the sense that that was going to be the press conference where, you know, you stay there for as long as there are questions, answer everything, get all the information out there, and then move on. And that hasn't been the case because there continues to be more information. So, I mean, you sort of feel like maybe the campaign needs to do something along those lines again and just get everything out there that they can so that, you know, people start to trust her again. I mean, the numbers are very low on people who trust her, and which is not a place you want to be when you're running a campaign where you want people's trust to
right.
vote for you for president.
And when you look at the numbers, Hillary 41, Bernie 35, Biden 17, Bernie is really gaining some ground here.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, has maybe it's an 18-point lead in New Hampshire. You know, I mean, Bernie Sanders has really, you know, captured a lot more support than people thought he would. And, you know, whether that stays or not, you know, it's hard to tell. But, you know, he certainly caught a good segment of the electorate. And a portion of that, I think, has to do with Hillary Clinton's own actions. You know, people are not, you know, sort of jumping toward her campaign. And so it's left an opening. And Bernie Sanders right now is the one of the only places for them to go. You know, if you're not excited about Hillary, you know, you go to Bernie, you know, and maybe Joe Biden mixes that up a little bit and gives voters another opportunity or another person to go for. But, you know, Bernie Sanders has certainly caught on a segment of the electorate.
Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and we have lines open for you for all things political for this Monday. What do you make of Hillary Clinton's email situation? Her poll numbers are going down somewhat. We will still talk about Carly Fiorina. What do you make of John Boehner's resignation? That was a big deal on Friday. And do you imagine that there will be as pragmatic, even though he was a pretty staunch conservative, he showed signs of pragmatism. Will the new speaker be much less likely to want to make deals? It was a fairly big thing. The Pope's 6-day three-city tour, does it make any lasting impression on politicians, on human beings in America? What about that? What do you think about Planned Parenthood, the emphasis on Planned Parenthood, and that being tied to shutting down the government, which won't happen this week, but we're going to face the same thing in December. Donald Trump, what do you make of Donald Trump? After hearing about Matt's piece in what he did in Atlantic City, does this guy worry you? Why do you think he's still doing pretty well? Is he bound to burn out at some point in the not-too-distant future? And tomorrow we'll talk about this for a full hour, but there are big things taking place at the UN. The president is there, and he is meeting this afternoon with Vladimir Putin, and they'll be talking about Syria, which is an incredibly important issue on the world stage. Can you imagine what that meeting will be? We'll talk about that with Matt as well. So we have lines open for you, and would love to hear from you. Let's go to our first caller is Ron in Toma. Hi, Ron.
Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, my comment is if Hillary to come clean and not lied about Benghazi, you know, that was the start of it, and committed all of her emails as she should have to a federal server, then she'd be in prison where she belongs, because she's be legally charged with at least four felonies. That's my comment.
Okay, well, I haven't heard that kind of comment before. Should she be facing felonies, Matt?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it what does raise that question is sort of how they've handled, how she has handled classified information. And I think that gets to the crux of some of the email issues, which is, you know, interestingly sort of stuck more on her than the Benghazi stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Benghazi didn't really, aside from the investigation that led to some of these emails, you know, there's not been sort of a smoking gun on her and Benghazi about, you know, her lying on things or mishandling the situation, more than the emails have created this cloud around her and the trustworthiness. But the classified aspect of the emails, I think, is where you get at, you know, potentially law-breaking scenarios. And, you know, she's not a target of any investigation that we know of. We don't know that she's mishandled classified information, but the fact that she had a server that was set up privately and she was getting emails on that in an unsecure way could raise that possibility. So I think that that's the types of things that investigators are looking at, whether she did get information perhaps sent to her private email.
Yeah. Well, let's play this out for a moment. What would happen if she would have to withdraw, Matt?
Well, I think then you have a much sort of wilder race. I mean, but you look at the Democratic Party, it's not like there's somebody waiting in the wings. I mean, there is Joe Biden. I think the party would turn toward, like, sort of the old party stalwarts. You know, you think of Joe Biden, you think of maybe John Kerry. You know, both of those guys would, you know, Al Gore has been floated actually recently too. So, you know, I mean, there's people who have had experience in the party, but there's no, you know, the Republican Party right now is so vibrant in the presidential campaign that they have to hold two debates. You know, they can't all fit on the same debate stage. Whereas on the Democratic side, I don't know that there's sort of a young up and comer. You know, who the party could sort of turn toward. It's more, I think, they would turn to people who have been in these types of positions in the past, which would be a Biden or maybe a John Kerry. Although with Kerry, it gets really problematic because he's in a position now that can't be political at all. So, I mean, he would have to resign, which I don't know that he's inclined to do. But that's I think, kind of what the party would turn to its sort of old standard bearers.
Jerry is next in Hamburg. Hi, Jerry.
Hello there. I was just going to reply to the gentleman who mentioned Benghazi. After wasting $14 million, the Republicans have found out there was no stand-down order. There was nothing done wrong. It was a event not unlike the 426 Marines killed in Beirut. It was just one of those things that militarily was wrong, but could not be affected by Hillary Clinton or by Barack Obama. And as far as the emails, I'm still waiting for someone to investigate Bush and Cheney for using the RNC, Republican National Committee, in other words, server for their emails and deleting around 20 million of them.
Matt, okay.
After the...
All right, Jerry, thanks for the call. Matt.
Yeah, I mean, I do, you know, like the caller's pointing out, I mean, I do think that the Benghazi investigations have not directly implicated Hillary Clinton too much as part of that. What it did do, though, I mean, they were looking for emails, and that kind of triggered a little bit of the State Department to try and track down some of Hillary Clinton's emails and figure out, well, there are no emails. Where are the emails? You know, so then they started requesting Hillary Clinton's batch of emails, and then, you know, now we are where we are today, you know, and sort of a lot of that. So, I mean, I do think that if Republicans' goals were to entrap Hillary Clinton in sort of a mini scandal, they've been able to do it, just not the way that they necessarily intended with Benghazi. And to the point on the RNC and other emails from the Bush administration, I mean, emails, I think, are a fair point in sort of going after those. I'm not sort of totally clear on the legalities, I admit, on sort of what they would be allowed to use in setting up separate accounts at the White House. I do know that the protocol, by the time that Hillary Clinton was getting into office and was taking over at the State Department, you know, you are allowed to use private emails. But you need to set it up in a way that allows for preservations of those, because those are public records. As a public official, you need to preserve those types of records.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. Jane in Green Bay. Hi.
Hello.
Go ahead, Jane. Hi.
Hi. I have a question. I'm wondering about why Martin O'Malley is never mentioned. He's got some really good ideas, and the media just ignores him, which makes me feel like the media is picking the president, not the people.
Yeah. He is an attractive candidate. He isn't getting much attention, Matt. Why?
Right. And I mean, on paper, you got to think. I mean, he's the former governor of a big state. You know, he did a lot of things, especially that liberals and progressives like a lot, you know, out of Maryland. He's not managed to catch fire, you know, and part of that is, you know, the media, I think, will use various ways of sort of figuring out if somebody's catching on, you know, and some of that is polls, which, you know, it's sort of chicken and egg scenario. If he's not getting coverage, he's not going up in the polls, so he's not getting coverage, you know. And but you know, even if you go to Iowa or New Hampshire, the crowds are not quite there for him, and
right.
He's not sort of managed to you know, speak out and differentiate himself from Hillary Clinton the way that Bernie Sanders has. Honestly, you know, Bernie Sanders is drawing massive crowds, and you know, if anything, you tend to look at the race at the start, you would have thought Martin O'Malley would be getting a lot of the attention that Bernie Sanders is. Just because on paper, you know, Bernie Sanders is a kind of a far, far left guy from Vermont, you know, as a senator, and an older guy with, you know, sort of unkempt hair. You know, he doesn't have all the attributes that you tend to think of as a strong presidential candidate, but he's managed to tap into a nerve in the country that I think has caught on, and so he's drawing big crowds, and when the media looks at that, you know, there's something serious going on around the country. Whereas Martin O'Malley, you know, on paper, he has all of the attributes that you would think would be a strong presidential contender. And maybe he'll surprise us in that regard in the debates. But so far, he just has not had a breakout moment. And he's sort of one of those candidates that could really use one.
Well, you mentioned Sanders' hair, and it's just an indication of how genuine this guy is, that, you know, he doesn't put all this gook in it to make him look terrific. The hair kind of flies around, and he appears to be, and I think it's one of his qualities that attract people to him. Obviously, he's got a message that's strong, and it's a very legitimate issue of what's happened with income inequality, but he's addressing it in this genuine kind of fashion. There's Bernie, and, you know, you believe that he believes what he's saying.
And, you know, there's a refreshing quality to that, I think. You know, he is who he is, and he acts how he is on stage. And, you know, there's an aspect of that about Donald Trump, too. You know, I mean, Donald Trump, you know, kind of is who he is, and, you know, just says whatever comes to his head. And sometimes that's not smart politically, you know. And Trump has got himself in, you know, hot water for some of the things that he's said. But there's a refreshing quality to the unscriptedness, both of Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, I think, that, you know, increasingly politics is so scripted and feels very poll-driven and focus group tested. And so there's a refreshing quality when you have a candidate on stage, you know, just speaking his mind and sort of saying what he actually thinks, you know, and that's caught on, I think. And I think that there's a degree of their support that is just their unscripted nature.
Right. Well, contrast that, and she's doing very well with Carly Fiorina, who's not doesn't sound scripted, but she sounds like she knows what she's talking about. And you've written about her recently, too, that nobody really saw Fiorina successfully taking on and beating Donald Trump during a debate. She speaks so fluently.
Yeah, and confidently, and
right.
You know, she, I mean, although, like, you know, to be fair, on the Planned Parenthood issue, you know, she's speaking confidently about something that doesn't quite measure up to the facts. But, you know, she's very surprising in that debate, in a way. I mean, if people saw the first debate, she also performed very, very well during the first debate.
Mm-hmm.
The problem was she was in the second tier at that point. She was on a much less watched stage in the Fox News debate, but she did so well at that that then people started giving her a second look, and she polled well enough to eke into, you know, the main stage for the debate on CNN a couple weeks ago, and did very well in that, and found a way to kind of knock Donald Trump back on his heels in a way that, you know, a lot of the other candidates, including those that poll much better than Carly Fiorina, or did before the debate at least, were able to do. And so I think she surprised a lot of people, and people I think are sort of hungering for an outsider, which she qualifies that, you know, as somebody who's not run. And you know, she speaks very well, and she's a pretty good candidate. I think the challenge for her may be what's coming, you know, which is closer looks at her business background.
Right.
She ran for Senate in 2010 against Barbara Boxer in California and lost that race. California is a very Democratic state, but it was a very, very Republican year that year. So she, you know, she could have had a shot at unseating Boxer, which some people thought she would, but until Barbara Boxer really used Carly Fiorina's business background and some of the decisions that she made at Hewlett-Packard to, you know, sort of effectively win that campaign.
Right. Gene, thanks for your call. Jeff in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I'm sure your guest is absolutely right that it's the unscriptedness of Trump and Bernie Sanders that are getting them so much adherence and voters and whatnot. But I just find it really amusing that we've all been talking about the rightward shift of American politics for decades now, especially with, you know, Thomas Frank's book back in 2004, What's Wrong with Kansas and the whole bit. And what do we have today? The front runner of the Republicans is a former Democrat who a lot of Republicans won't even accept as a Republican.
Right.
And on the Democrat side, if Hillary disappears, as your question was, we have a fellow who he's not a socialist, he's a Democratic socialist, let's call him, someone who is leading the left. And so in both parties, we have someone who are probably far to the left of whatever that center is people were talking about, but perhaps in line with maybe where the American voters are today. I'll listen off.
Thanks, Jeff. Matt.
It's an interesting point, and one I hadn't thought about, actually, you know, sort of comparing, you know, both of those candidates. I mean, I do think that, you know, we saw a couple weeks ago where Jeb Bush started doing some pretty effective ads pointing out some of the past positions of Donald Trump. He was registered as a Democrat. You know, he's had positions that are very much in line with the Democratic Party in the past. And it was a pretty effective ad pointing out a lot of those that history with Donald Trump. It does not appear like that has necessarily stuck with people, which is interesting and sort of trying to figure out why, you know, particularly among sort of the Tea Party supporters who are generally quite conservative within the Republican Party, support Donald Trump in, you know, more than most groups do. You know, so Trump has managed, and part of that I think is just force of personality, you know, honestly. Is a first impression with a lot of people was very good. So when you tell them about some of the things that might be negative, it doesn't bother them as much because their first impression has been good, and so they sort of are willing to stick with Trump. That might erode over time as people get more serious about who they're going to actually vote for instead of just tell a pollster who they support right now. But, you know, I think the macro argument is an interesting one, is whether this indicates anything about a leftward shift in the country if Republicans are willing to support Donald Trump, and if Democrats end up going with Bernie Sanders, it would be a heck of an interesting general election.
You could say that again. You'd have the most interesting one you've ever seen in your lifetime, Matt.
And a lot of discussions about hair, I think, you know, with both of them.
They probably get some new dues for the big event, right? Matt Visor, White House and National Politics reporter for the Boston Globe, is our guest. It's All Things Political you're listening to for this Monday, and we'll take more calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. John in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello. Can I talk about Putin and Obama?
Okay.
I have a feeling that they might be on the same team, you know, the world international, New World Order. And Obama's, of course, his grandparents were OSS CIA.
Yeah, I don't think Obama and Putin are on the same page. I think they're pretty far from it, Matt.
I think the frosty interactions between them show that, unless there's something we don't know about. But yeah, I mean, you know, Obama and Putin, you know, they've not been on speaking terms though, a lot of times. I mean, they've not gotten along, and I don't know that we know yet the results of their meeting in New York at the UN. But you know, there's a lot of interest right now on a lot of issues. You know, chief among them Syria, where there's a lot of concern on the U.S. side about what the Russians are doing. So I think we'll sort of await to hear what the results of that are.
It's such a serious issue for the world, isn't it? And to have Putin and Iran teaming with Assad, who's far from being, you know, a kind guy. What a mess this whole thing is, and our not knowing how to really fight ISIS and all these refugees creating this huge crisis in Europe.
It's a very difficult situation, and the dynamics, and sort of, you know, it's almost like a chess match. I mean, you don't kind of know exactly what the Russians are doing or thinking, and you know, it creates some interesting scenarios and a difficult one. I mean, with a very volatile region.
Mm-hmm. Donna is next in Round Lake. Hi, Donna.
Hi. Great show. Hey, I got four quick points I can do in 15 to 30 seconds. First one, with Hillary Clinton, the Benghazi tragedy, that was something that for whatever reason, nobody got ahead of it. But it was certainly something that she couldn't have prevented, I think, with the information that she had. And she regrets it as much as anybody else. Now, the email thing, she didn't do anything wrong. It wasn't really regulated. If it was so insecure, what's the problem? I mean, if it was that insecure and people are worried about what was there, take a look. So it couldn't have been so insecure. And I guess the other two things are, is she needs to get out there with her message, with what she wants to talk about. Right now, for the most part, all you hear is what the Republican Party line is, and Lord knows she could get in there and do the job. Hit the ground running. So that's what I had to say. Thank you.
All right, Donna. Thanks for the call. Matt?
Yeah, I mean, she's very qualified. I mean, to the last point, she could hit the ground running. I mean, she comes with an awful lot of qualifications and a background that you know, most people would probably appreciate in a president. You know, I mean, she's lived in the White House as first lady. She's been a senator in New York. She's been Secretary of State. You know, she comes with a pretty stellar resume. I do think though the email issue, it's maybe not the actual emails. I mean, if you look at what we've been able to see from the emails, there's nothing, you know, in there so far that's scandalous. You know, there's nothing in there that, you know, has generated too much traction about the substance of the emails. I think what the issue so far has been more of is the fact of setting up a whole server, and you're operating outside of the State Department and the State Department protocols and the technology that the State Department has and the monitoring of, you know, hacking or emails, you know, some foreign government trying to get into the emails. She's removing herself from all of that to set up a server at her house that is totally independent. So I think that kind of gets to the issue, I think, for voters, and raises questions about what she was doing and why she was doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, she said something, and I can't quote it directly, but I think she said something on Meet the Press yesterday where it was almost as though this air of privilege, for which she is also criticized, that, well, you know, it was in the basement, and that's the whole system that my husband used, and, you know, he was president, and so, you know, we're above whatever kinds of rules you have to follow because it's his thing down there, and he was the president. You know, it's kind of this air of, we were at the top of government. This is all right. It's bills. You know,
Yeah, which is also an area as a presidential candidate that you may not want to be in. You know, she also has not driven a car, you know, for 2 or 3 decades, you know.
Oh, my.
Which is because she was first lady. She's been in positions of privilege and of power, and mm-hmm. that layers around her and security and all of the trappings that go along with the positions that she's held, which in one way is understandable, but on another level, as a voter, it's harder to relate to the average person who's sitting in traffic and who's, you know, trying to stop at McDonald's or, you know, get home, and you know, the sort of average things of daily life for most people and mm-hmm. most voters, it gets harder, just the degree of layers that she's had around her for an awfully long time. That also makes her qualified, by the way. I mean, you know, she has a lot of those qualifications because she's been in those positions, but it makes it harder for her, to relate to average voters.
Right. And the campaign chooses to not have her really interact with people, so she's got this detail around her. She doesn't wade into the crowd to really have heart-to-heart conversations with people. You know, it has to be set up as a listening tour or whatever. It talk about a genuine quality. She needs that quality somehow.
Yeah, and so as a result, it all feels a little bit contrived. You know, she can go on shows. She has started doing this more and more. Shows like Ellen, you know, she was on there maybe 2 weeks ago, where it is a softer image. You know, she can joke a little bit more, and she can show a little bit more personality, or, you know, she was doing some dance moves on there even. You know,
but I didn't see that.
It makes it hard, but to the point about just interacting with an average voter, it's hard. You know, there's rope lines, and there's security, and mm-hmm. you know, it just makes it hard to get directly to them, which a lot of presidential candidates will experience, usually, though, much later in the campaign, once they're the nominee. Then they get kind of walled off from voters. But there's this sort of cherished experience of going into living rooms and diners and, you know, having legitimate interactions with people that, for her, is almost impossible, just because of the amount of activity that comes around her as a result of her being a former first lady.
Thank you, Donna. Ray, Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I thought previously that I was a Bernie Sanders supporter, and I happened to mention that to a friend at work, and he said, "Oh, really? Well, why don't you look at the Green Party's candidate? I think her name is Jill Steiner. She was on Tavis Smiley during the last week or so, and boy, have I changed my views on Bernie Sanders. If you're on the left, you really want to have a hard look at the lady who's running for the Green Party, because she is truly our only leftist candidate. The other ones are all still part of the corporate monopoly, which is running the Republican and Democratic Party."
And why do you like her, Ray?
She pointed out some things about Bernie Sanders I did not know about, like his views on the military budget and other things that just stunned me. And I thought, well, I thought Bernie was my guy, but now I'm definitely voting Green this time around, and I hope a lot of other people listening have a look at her, at what she has to say, and especially her comparison to Bernie Sanders, because Bernie Sanders, as it turns out, is just part of the Democratic-Republican same coin, two sides of the same coin. It's all about, I think in the end, Bernie Sanders is going to throw his support over to Hillary, thinking that he's wound up the left, but in reality, we do have a real choice on the left, and it is the Green Party.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Matt, 15 seconds in response to that, and then we have to say goodbye.
Yeah, Jill Stein, she's I think this is her third or fourth time on the Green Party ticket. She is an interesting candidate. She is from Massachusetts, and actually, interestingly enough, debated Mitt Romney when they both ran for governor of Massachusetts in 2002, and so she did have some experience. Tried to debate Mitt Romney in 2012, but it didn't quite work out.
No, I guess it didn't. Matt, thank you very much for being with us. Happy campaign trails to you.
Thank you, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Matt Visor, he is the White House and national politics reporter for the Boston Globe. He's covering the 2016 race. He covered the 2012 race as well. And we thank him for being with us this hour and for covering all kinds of topics. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour, and to KP as well for answering your many phone calls. Thanks for your phone calls. And leave messages on our Facebook page, too, because we like to read those when we're done with the show. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. News is coming up, and we'll be back.